Before we begin this episode, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams, especially our BBF, BFFs. That would be Cassandra Tapia, Cristian Galindo, Evelyn Preciado. Y'all are such real ones. You've been here, some of y'all, since we essentially started. And even now, as our format changes, y'all still are here. And I have mad love for you guys. I literally owe you guys a mug. And another little shout out to a new member, AB, who joined our free tier, which is something you can do on Patreon. And that just gives you like access to different announcements and community conversations that we're having over on Bitter Brown Femmes. Yeah, check it out, patreon.com/bitterbrownfemmes. The link is in the description. Let's start the show. All right. Welcome back to Bitter Brown Femmes. This is episode one of season three, y'all. We have made it to season three. We shot 34 episodes last season in 1 year, which with like eight bonus episodes, which was wild. The season before that, season one, quote unquote, was 50 episodes over a period of like 4 years. So like, yeah, we were hustling last year. And thank y'all for, joining us after we were gone for, almost 3 years. Yeah, y'all are the best. But hey, I'm Ruben. I'm coming to you from Portland, originally from East LA. If this is your first time listening in to Bitter Brown Femmes, we usually come here to talk shit about politics, about culture, and about the shit that's like ticking us off at the moment. We're coming out here with a Chicanx queer perspective. I previously had a ho co-host, Cassandra, and she will be coming in and out of the podcast as she finds time in her schedule. But for now, and for most of the time, it'll just be me and a special guest. For the first few episodes, I will not have a special guest just to like set the pace and set the tone because it's becoming something different. And I don't always myself like interview podcasts because sometimes I'm just like, I just want to hear what that bitch who's hosting just has to say about the world. And so this is me saying what I have to say about the world. Eventually, the other bitch who also founded this podcast will come through, Cassandra. And in the meantime, let's get to it. First of all, we always start with a recession indicator. And this week, the week of January 6th, the recession indicator is that America bombed Venezuela and kidnapped its president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife. And they killed 80 people. Our government killed 80 people without getting approval from Congress or any other government. They just bombed Caracas in Venezuela and kidnapped two. I mean, a major world leader. I know that the leftist thing to say is like, oh, like Maduro did wrong, blah, blah, blah. Yes, Maduro did wrong. We'll preface it with that. Like, he, there are some people that have proof that he stole an election and his people. The Venezuelan people have been suffering steep incline in the state, the standard of living. A lot of them are in poverty since Hugo Chavez took power and brought socialism to Venezuela. We also have to keep in mind, though, when we start that, when we say like, oh, people are poor. Yes, but why are people poor? Like, what is happening? And like one of the things that happened is that sanctions happened. Sanctions are like, prohibitions and like limitations on like the amount of trade people can do, the amount of money people can make from the goods that they sell, and like what even they can sell, who they can sell with, and what crops they can even, like what they can even sell, right? So like if you're Venezuela, one of the, biggest like oil reserves in the world, and you're limited by sanctions to only certain people, like all those like reserves can only render a certain amount of money. All of your crops can only render a certain amount of money. And that type of sanction is made to like cause recessions, cause economic turmoil. It makes it so that these socialist countries cannot trade with other world powers and cannot give their people the resources that they need. So yes, people in Venezuela are fucking suffering. A lot of people in Venezuela might be happy that Maduro is gone. At the same time, there has never been a moment in history when a colonial power such as the United States has taken over a country and made it better. Every time a colonial power such as the United States has invaded a country such as Venezuela, like all they do is pillage. All they do is take their resources. In this case, oil is the big one, right? But there's been other situations, right? There's places throughout Southern America which are called the Banana Republic, which were colonized and their governments destabilized literally for bananas, to make bananas as cheap as we get them, right? Sometimes as low as 20 cents. There are places in this world where you cannot get a banana for 20 cents a fucking banana. And that's me talking about Trader Joe's. Like, there's other places in the US where bananas might be more expensive, but I'm a Trader Joe's bitch for because I only buy for one. But yeah, there is, and that shows I'm a, I'm a privileged ass American, but I'm still gonna talk about this shit. And also, I want us to keep in mind that it's like when we talk about like, oh, like, Maduro did X and Y, okay, and so did fucking Margaret Thatcher, and so did Bill Clinton, and so did Trump, and so did Biden, and so did Obama, and so did all the Bushes. Like, every leader, has done some fucked up shit that can be called out, which is part of the reason I identify as anarchist a little bit, but when it comes down to it, the United States used our tax dollars to bomb a nation without approval. So the Democrats want to be like, Kamala would have gone through process or whatever. Kamala would have bombed these bitches too. But he didn't even go through the approval or whatever. So, like, illegal. Like, according to leaks, he actually informed the Washington Post and the New York Times that he was going to do this shit. So this is premeditated. And he's been like gearing up for it. Like, he's been bombing like fishermen boats and shit. Like, and by he, I mean like the United States government, by way of Trump. And we've just kind of like, we just saw that shit happen and we didn't like think about the next step. And I'm saying we because me too, I was just like, fuck, like, I did not have the foresight to think this was gonna be like a full ass bombing, fucking kidnapping situation. A lot of us were blind to the situation. Like, we didn't know enough about history, about escalation, to know that that was gonna be the next step. But it's happened before. It's happened in Argentina. It's happened, especially in Latin America, in the Middle East. But yes, and like we also have to remember that like the government used our tax dollars to kill people. And this is something that we've heard a million times because the genocide in Gaza is funded by the US. But literally, the US military bombed Venezuela, killing at least 80 people as of initial reports, all to kidnap Maduro and his wife Celia, who at press time had like hardcore bandages on her forehead and like swollen eyes because of how like beat up she was. Like, this is an old lady. Like, you really needed to do all that for, even if she was like a high stakes criminal. We've all seen like those fucking school shooters being taken with less force than that. Fuck. What was the fucking killer that got taken to Burger King before being taken to jail? So yes, our tax dollars would once again used to kill civilians in 2026. Happy fucking New Year. This all was done to get Venezuela's oil reserves, which as of today, January 6th, Dia de los Reyes Magos, America has seized, I think it was 50 million gallons of Venezuelan oil. This is not some imaginary Reagan bullshit trichonomics. These savings will not go down to your bitch ass at home. This is all to fund the war machine. All this oil is going to be used to continue the bombing, exploitation, imperialism across the world, particularly affecting nations of black folks and brown folks. There, our gas is never going to go back to cents on the gallon. So, like, shut the fuck up if you or your relative has ever imagined celebrating American acquisition of oil. And we're also coming to a point where we're like, we can't even call this out. There was activists. Jessica Plichta, who helped the Grand Rapids opponents of war organize an anti-war protest. And she was arrested on camera just for organizing a protest. So, freedom of speech, bitches, where you at? I thought we have freedom of speech. I thought that's what we were fighting for, with guns and speech. We don't have speech. We can't even fucking protest a war that we're funding. Y'all talk about like you don't want your tax dollars to go to fucking welfare or whatever. They're going to war. What is war doing for us? How is war making eggs cheaper? How is war lowering your rent? It's not, baby. It's gonna raise it if anything. And all the while we're losing rights. Jessica Plichta is in custody as of today, January 6th still. And she was and it was recorded by WZZM News as she was being interviewed. So they're not even afraid of that shit anymore. They're not even afraid of media because they've gutted media completely. There's so many publications that have folded over the last decade, even the last few years. Trump in the last year limited who can even be at the White House press room. And today, January 6th, PBS announced that like they've lost all funding. They're not dead and out, which like if you have the money to fucking fund them, girl, throw them a dollar. Because shit, I know that my ass learned how to fucking speak English because of Barney, so I know there's a lot of folks out there who like, it's not just bilingual folks like me. It's like other folks, whose parents, didn't have the time to spend with them to teach them to help them develop their language skills. There's even bilingual kids like me who needed things like Dora the Explorer to help transition into English. People who just needed to learn how to like count in those preschool years, those years before preschool. All that shit is so valuable. Not to mention all the documentaries they made, all the research they did, all the broadcasts they did, because like NPR is also part of that shit. So if you ever enjoyed a fucking Tiny Desk concert, bitch, you better throw a dollar. But yeah, like none of that shit, none of that money that the government is like stealing from Venezuela through oil is really coming to the American public. So I want us to like divorce ourselves from the idea that that is ever trickling down to us, because it's not, baby. Your dollar, your fucking eggs are still gonna be $5 for a dozen. For like the cheap kind, like shit. And I want to go back for a second to like the fact that the Washington Post and the New York Times, like, it has been announced that allegedly they knew that the US government was going to invade Venezuela and they said nothing because they didn't want to risk the lives of the people that were going to bomb the shit out of Venezuela. Never mind the 80 plus people that got bombed and killed and murdered. Another outlet that was in on this was the BBC. So you Europeans cannot wash your fucking hands on this on multiple levels, but especially the BBC. So it has been leaked that BBC journalists have been banned from describing the kidnapped Venezuelan leader as having been kidnapped. A BBC news editor has sent the BBC journalist an email that says that they must define him as captured, seized, and not kidnapped. And that's to like manufacture consent. And so, if you're not familiar with the term manufactured consent, it's like this term that describes like, okay, like the powers that be, whether that be media, the government, celebrities, even people in power, the half power, they make you accept a status quo by planting seeds that make you normalize what they say and what they do. So in this case, the BBC saying Nicolas Maduro was captured or seized. Those terms are like the terms of villainization of like a criminal, of criminalization, right? But the reality of it is that he was not tried for a crime in Venezuela. And even if he was tried in a crime in the US, there's extradition processes that need to happen, right? So, because he was not tried or like even charged with like a crime and the due process is not followed, he was literally kidnapped. But saying somebody is kidnapped makes it so that we see the situation as what it is, which is a crime, not on the part of the Venezuelan people, government, or leadership, but on the part of the US government, right? Similarly, like we all know the examples of like, specifically like black men being defined as like quote unquote thugs or like quote unquote criminals, when they are murdered by police. Even if their murder has nothing to do with a crime, they're defined that way. Their history is dug up so that the public thinks of them as deserving of death, as deserving as the fate that they got, as opposed to humanizing by saying, like, this person was murdered by police. That would ring different bells. That would not manufacture our complacency, our consent with the status quo, what the status quo is saying to us. I hope that makes sense to you. But yes, the language that the BBC is using around Venezuela and the US is to manufacture consent about like what our tax dollars are paying for. And while all this is going on, some fucking Latinos all across the world are like fucking celebrating the fact that Mr. Trump is fucking quote unquote liberating Venezuela. Bitch, that motherfucker doesn't even want us in the US. You think he wants to? What makes you think he wants to liberate us? Look, the reason that people are immigrating away from Venezuela and other countries, El Salvador and even Mexico, is because of the sanctions and the oppression that they've had to face from global powers such as the US, primarily the US, specifically in Venezuela's case, where they're sanctioned the fuck out of their lives. They've had to leave there because of the amount of poverty that our sanctions have caused. You think they want to fucking save you? No, this is a fucking prison camp scheme. People leave Venezuela. They get trapped by, they work here, for slave wages. They get trapped by ICE, made to work in captivity for free. Like, that is the cycle of things. And that is not gonna end with them, bitch. Like, girl, they're not gonna tell me apart from other people. I'm still brown. Like, there's multiple cases of citizens being arrested by ICE just because of how they look. And Trump has recently threatened other countries, most specifically Mexico, including the president, Claudia Sheinbaum, who is one of the most beloved politicians in the world. But, and like, I honestly, at this point, like, yes, there are faults in her leadership. That is leftist as fuck to fucking criticize. I do not have the capacity to do that. I will fucking say that up front. Everything that I've seen from her has been so groundbreaking, and I've had to even fight my Mexican relatives who are living over there about like, hey, you didn't have a fucking pension, like you don't have access to healthcare, and now a doctor is coming to fucking visit you. Like, that is like the things that happened in Mexico over the last 2 decades after Vicente Fox are the kind of changes that America wish happened. And yes, it's a narco problem. And guess whose fault that is? Who the fuck is the highest consumer of fucking drugs, dude? It's fucking America. Like, bitch. Like, yes, there is drug trafficking problems happening in Mexico in the benefit of America. Like, wake up. So, what is happening because of this fucking continued antagonism of other countries is that like Trump is setting up a stage where he's setting up enemies against the US, right? So Venezuela, their closest allies are Cuba and Russia. Ukraine's closest antagonist is Russia. China is also part of the union. I mean, not the official union, but like people that are allied with Venezuela and Russia. Russia, Venezuela, even Mexico have shown support to Palestine. Is how world wars start, girls. And I'm not trying to be alarmist, but like shit's lining up in a way that like people who have studied fascism can say what's happening. I'm trying to find hope in this entire situation. Mandani is like a big beacon. It honestly feels like hope sometimes because it feels like Obama era hope, but like, that motherfucker is showing up to things. He's like, a week into his mayorship, already walking the walk in a lot of perspectives, like didn't back down when people, push back on him having like a multicultural multi-identity like inauguration, which I didn't even know mayors had inauguration. Like that was the first mayor inauguration I've ever seen in my life. But he had trans folks, people of all cultures in there, and He's doing the damn thing. So it is obvious that America is sick of this shit. Even that fucking, it's January 6th. And so there's been a lot of like, it's the 50 years since January 6th commemorations. And even that, like, they call him, I think they're like the QAnon shaman dude, the guy who showed up with the big horns and like shirtless buffalo skin thing to the January 6th protest. Like, even he's anti-Trump now. Just crazy to me. But, the tides are turning in some small way. We can have hope. Hope is the strongest thing we can have. Action is the strongest thing we can do. But also, like, this whole Trump shit should have been over after January 6th. Bitch, he tried to take over the government. He tried to do a fucking coup. That should have been game over. And we're still here. We're all a bunch of fucking weak bitches who couldn't fucking do shit about it when our government was being attacked. Yeah. That's the biggest thing that has happened this week. That's the things that have made me bitter. So I'm gonna try to talk about the thing that made me less bitter in the last week or so, and that's gonna be heated rivalry. If you don't know, so heated rivalry is this show made by Crave Canada about some hockey players, written by Rachel Reid. And the twist is that these hockey players are gay. They were gay, but they're closeted, and they, like, over a period of like 10 years, like, figure out their relationship. And it has felt like pop culture is back, baby, kind of shit. It's been a while since, like, I felt like the internet was united on loving something. Maybe not since like Insecure and Game of Thrones, that like the internet was lit with like, we love this shit. We want to talk about and make memes about this shit in the best way possible. And it's for a good reason. Like, it's a well-written, I don't know about the books, and I haven't read the books. I'm reading the first one, which is Game Changers, which is actually involves my favorite characters in the show. We will get there eventually. But the show is written excellently. Six episodes, high drama, high melodrama, because it's not like real shit. Like, it's like, oh, I'm gay, but I'm rich as fuck, and I'm masked and white or white passing, blah, blah, blah. But it's like real human drama. Very beautifully shot. Everything looks like a movie, even though it was shot like in a fucking paper thin budget. Like, so in America, I understand from my time in the entertainment industry that, like, people usually make at least $8,000 an episode. I think that things have gone up to $16,000 an episode for like a series regular or like a main character. Correct me in the comments. But in Canada, apparently, the max is $6,000, which is sounds like, holy shit, I'm gonna make one very dramatic episode and make $6,000. No, it takes forever to make these things. Like, it took these dudes like a month, 37 days, which is wild for a production. Like, a TV show usually takes like, fuck, at least 10 days an episode, something like that. The ones that have their well-oiled machine running, maybe less. But yeah, something like 7, 10 days an episode. People need breaks, blah, blah. So it's not like 7 days straight. But these dudes made like $30,000 for this fucking show, which is not big in the grand scheme of things, because like, now they're super famous, the main actors. Which means they need security, which means they need managers and all this shit that totally steals all the money that they made. But not gonna get into the specifics of showbiz unless you want me to, because I do have a window into it because I have been in marketing for a minute, and I once upon a time wanted to be a TV show writer. Not anymore. But these beautiful hockey players fuck for 2 episodes, try to figure out when they're in love. Then we meet another couple who's essentially a rom-com, and they add a subtext to the main text that we would have not gotten. And then the show just be flat flourishes into this like magical, dangerous but safe space. Like, I think a lot of us were really ready to be heartbroken, but we ended up crying for different reasons, and that's really beautiful to me. I discovered Wolf Parade because of this show. Every good show needs a good soundtrack, and this show has an amazing soundtrack, and they fucking utilize that soundtrack to the max. Like, I think because of how low their budget is, they play the full song of things. They usually play the full song of things. I was peer pressured to watch a show by my best friends. Shout out Steffo and Luis. And I think it was like the first or second episode where it was like Feist, My Moon, My Man, which is one of my favorite songs ever from one of my favorite albums ever. Feist, The Reminder is like one of my favorite albums ever made. And I was like, this is going on forever. And as I thought about it over the last few weeks, I was like, oh, it's because I don't have like the budget to get different music after they've already paid for this pop song to play. Like, you pay for the song, might as well use the whole song. So there's a lot of instances where they use the whole song. So like in one of the in the climax, which is one of the most beautiful episodes of TV I've ever seen in my life, they use all of Wolf Parade's I'll Believe in Anything. And oh my God, every time I hear that, I like begin crying. It's like become it's gotten to the level of like Defying Gravity, where every time I hear Defying Gravity, like I start crying. I'm sorry. Like it cannot be unattached from its context for me anymore in the way that I found it. But yeah, the soundtrack is banging. The dudes are banging. They're super woke and always like being crazy and sexy on their interviews. And the show is such good writing. It's such good TV. Like, I pity the fool who's too cool to watch it right the fuck now and get on the wave. 'Cause let me tell you, I was too cool for school when Insecure came out because I had watched Issa Rae's first two shows. And it was essentially the same show. And I still wish I knew what it felt like to be on that insecure high from those shows. I literally started watching the last season of Game of Thrones just to be in the conversation. This is one of like, oh, monoculture is back, baby. So baby, watch Keira Ivory and get gay with it. All right, y'all. That's it for me. I hope you like season 3, episode 1 of Bitter Brown Femmes. You know, go over on Patreon, tell me if you want me to do something else. If you have a guest that you want me to bring on, give me their email. I'll hit them up. We'll do something. So, hope y'all like this. Love you guys. Thank you for tuning in. Have a good one. Love y'all. Bye. All right. But before I close, homies, I have to give a shout out to our I Know Her Level patrons, and that includes Fernando Peña, Selena Portera, Miranda E, Magdalena Saucedo, Ronnie Leyva, and Bianca Garcia. I know you, girl. So thank you for supporting us. If you wanna get a shout out, give us $1, give us $2, give us $15, and that'll help us continue this podcast, all right? Take care of yourselves. Bye.